Hi, my name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to bring you today's webinar on telephony and the common pitfalls that many agencies make in this important area of their business. As technology evolves and new communication channels gain popularity, the role that telephones are playing in collection agencies remains just as important as ever. But compliance concerns and need to keep costs in check are the opposing forces that can cause telephony-related problems to arise. We're fortunate to have a panel of experts with us today who will share their insights and strategies with us. This webinar is being generously sponsored by Arbyte Software. You'll get the chance to hear more about them a little later in our program. I wanted to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the ARM industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Let me tell you a little bit now about today's speakers. Robert Blair is a Senior Vice President of Contact Strategy and Dialing Systems and has been with DCI since 2009. As is the case with most of the management at DCI, he started as a collector and has worked his way up to the executive level during the past 9 years. He is responsible for DCI's contact strategy and dialing operations to ensure it is efficient, profitable, and competitive on the scorecard for all the client portfolios DCI services. Jonathan Harbin is the Chief Information Officer at Frost Arnett. Jonathan and his team are responsible for managing the ever-increasing amount of data flowing through the company. Before joining Frost Arnett, he worked in technology-related fields at Nashville-based healthcare companies for more than 10 years. Jonathan earned a bachelor's degree in information technology from Middle Tennessee State University and is a certified information systems security professional. Matt Kiefer is the Chief Officer for Information Development and Compliance for the Preferred Group of Tampa. He is the past president and current vice president and the education chair of the Florida Collectors Association. He served on the board of the National Healthcare Collections Association, was a member of HFMA and MGMA, and is also an ACA scholar and fellow. He has been in healthcare and collections since 2001. He enjoys shooting, MMA, CrossFit, and politics. He is also not known for being politically correct, which we really like about him. The format for today's webinar will be a discussion moderated by myself. We encourage everybody to submit questions, and we'll get to them when the discussion has concluded. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is being recorded, and a recording will be made available on accountsrecovery.net in the coming days. Finally, this event is an audio-only event, so if you're not seeing anything on your screen, you're not missing anything. And with that, let's jump into today's discussion. Robert will give you the honor of the first question. Let's start by asking, what are some of the common areas where a collection agency might be overspending when it comes to their telephony needs?
Thanks, Mike, and thanks for having me. So that first question is kind of a tricky one. You know, when you say overspending, it's really tough to determine, you know, what should your, you know, telephony cost be, when looking at your overall, you know, revenue line. A couple percent is probably where you want to stay, but obviously that's going to kind of depend on your business model. It's going to really depend on, you know, what you're trying to do, what you're trying to recover. Obviously, it's going to be a completely different situation when you're talking about a pre-collect or a, you know, BPO type service compared to maybe a, you know, collecting on purchase paper or out of that stuff or something like that. So really what you need to do is just kind of look at what your business model is, look in, you know, the portfolio that you're trying to recover, and then get an idea of, you know, who your market is and, you know, who you're trying to reach, with your telephony needs to determine, where you're overspending, where you're underspending. Kind of a good example would be, you know, if you're a small shop, collecting on, older out of stat paper, you probably don't need to spend a bunch of money on a fancy IVR. It's probably something that, you know, with the help of your regular dial vendor, you should be able to, you know, create something that would be pretty much free, essentially, other than just the time that it takes you to build it. Obviously, there's options out there with fancy IVRs and in AI, and that's great for some business models and some, size organizations. But, you know, I think that you want to spend your money on you know, your base products. You want to spend your money to make sure that you have a good, infrastructure to be able to handle, the amount of traffic that you have flowing in and out. You want to make sure that you have a good dial vendor to work with. Here at DCI, we use LiveOps. We recommend them. They're great. So kind of really depends on what you're trying to accomplish. But I think you should really put your money in, getting a good rate on your regular telephony bill. And then as you grow, that's kind of what we did is kind of just added on products. Obviously, when you get to a shop where you have 3 and 4 locations and several hundred agents, that's where you can start putting your money into kind of add on products to increase the customer experience. But I think the bulk of your money should go on just your baseline, making calls, and then also your payroll staff. A lot of the times you can have, the best dialer and the best, technology, but if you really don't, if you don't have the people to manage it, if you don't, invest in, sending your dial manager out to, webinars and events and, really looking to see, socializing with other competitors. I really think investing in the people that are managing your telephony needs is really important and something that's really overlooked a lot of the times when you're counting your telephony costs.
I got a totally different read on that. So I looked at that and I'm answering it from an operations perspective. How am I going to make the most efficient use of my dialer? And I have found, at least in my experience, it comes down to training as well, because you want to minimize the amount of time that a collector is on any given call and make it as efficient and effective as possible. So calls that are too long unnecessarily, you can catch that by auditing the calls. Not teaching collectors how to properly overcome stalls and objections is another money waster. Not determining debtor intent and losing focus. If they're getting easily distracted or the debtor is taking them into a different direction, you gotta drive the training to the collector so they stay specific and focused on the accounts. Also designing campaigns based on a score or whatever you use so that you have different strategies for the different types of accounts, like you mentioned, the older debts versus newer placements and stuff. And you want to divert your collector resources to the right accounts. So you might use IVR in the lower performing, lower scored, or the older accounts versus the newer, fresher stuff. And that's all about, designing strategy. The other thing I found is if your dialer gives you back results codes, and you're not doing something with that, sometimes you tend to send the same accounts, like invalids and fax numbers, back to the dialer again and again and again. And that's going to waste time and efficiency and keep your collectors waiting. I also have found that, if you go and audit your accounts, you might find that you need an exhaust strategy at some point. You don't want to be calling, especially a lower performing account, hundreds and hundreds of times, over the years, whether you have it from cradle to grave or for a set amount of time. You want to have some kind of exhaust strategy at some point so you're not sending that phone number to the dialer. And then also not mixing day parts. So you can try calls on different days at different day parts. Somebody might not be in the morning, they might work a shift, and you have a better chance at catching them on different days if you're trying that call on different days and at different day parts. And the last thing I have is just not teaching your collectors to talk and type at the same time so that they can minimize the wrap up and move on to the next call.
Yeah, I would add a little bit to what Robert and Matt said. So, and at the risk of sounding too old fashioned, but I know our company's been around a long time, making sure that you're looking at that software as a service model as opposed to the older, hard phone lines. I'm not sure if everyone has already done that, but if not, I know we had more than a 50% saving just moving to a similar vendor to that Robert mentioned. And the other good part about that is they're able to grow with the company and, like you said, add on those features as you take on business or get into different verticals that you weren't in before. Now you can, buy that extra product and have it bolt on as opposed to the older method of just hard phone lines. And then a little bit, you know, to what Matt said, again, I think you definitely have to be using that scoring model, you know, propensity to pay score. And on that lower probability, lower balance business, you know, maybe you look at something like a courtesy caller. And again, that depends on if you've got consent on cell phones from your clients. But, you know, being able to just call and drop a voicemail, it's a lot cheaper than, you know, actual live minute time on the dialer. So, and the day parts, as Matt mentioned, you know, we do a lot with those results. You know, if we've tried calling someone a couple times in the morning and, you know, always get no answer or machine, then use that analytics to have that number be dialed later in the day. That's definitely strategies that we're using and would recommend to others.
Excellent. Really, I'm really interested, you know, interested by the different points that have been raised so far. Robert, I want to circle back to something you said, which I thought was an interesting point regarding the staffing for the people sort of in, you know, sort of who are overseeing your telephony or your IT. Is there a rule of thumb or some guide that a collection agency can use sort of based on its size to determine, you know, sort of what type of administrative staff it needs?
Well, yeah, that's a great question, Mike. And really it's going to depend on, again, what type of business that you're working, what, you know, the size of your organization, but, you know, speaking from experience here, you know, I oversee, you know, the dialing operations, you know, I have the support staff, you know, as far as IT goes. Most of my job is strategy as far as deciding what we dial, when we dial, what works, some of the things that, you know, you guys, Matt and John talked about earlier, you know, looking at your data, looking at your results, seeing what works, putting in exhaust periods, cool off periods, stuff like that. So I think, you know, for us, I do that. I have, you know, another member of my team that kind of helps me in that regard and then kind of also bridges the gap between the analysts that actually run the day-to-day operations of the dialer. Granted, we're a pretty big shop. We have, you know, three locations as well as we have, you know, clicker staff in the Philippines as well as India. So we're spread out quite a bit, but, you know, my staff basically consists of me and, you know, four other guys. And then, you know, obviously, you know, your operations team, your project managers, you know, they're your conduit between kind of strategy and operations to say, hey, what are we seeing? You know, we're seeing the same account every single day at 8:02 a.m. You know, maybe we should try a afternoon call. And then obviously investing in your analytics staff to be able to present your, you know, your operations and your strategy team some deep analysis to say, hey, here's what the numbers, you know, look like for us to be able to look at those and then make decisions. So, you know, although I think that, you know, the telephony cost isn't really wrapped up necessarily in your payroll staff, the people that service it, a lot of the times what ends up happening is, you know, if you're understaffed, you know, as far as your dialing operations or your strategy team goes, a lot of the times you're kind of flying in the dark. You know, you're basically just building a campaign for the sake of building it. If you don't have the time to really look into what's working and analyzing, you know, hey, you know, on this particular recovery score, we get a 1% pay rate compared to this at a 15% pay rate. So, you know, really looking at the data and putting the investment into the staff to look at the data and then to make decisions, I think is really important and is sometimes overlooked.
I'd add to that. I'd say, obviously, I think conventional wisdom is that the more accounts you have, the more right party contacts you're going to have naturally. But if you get older accounts, you're also going to incur data scrubbing costs. A lot of those people are, you know, moving from place to place, like in Florida, it's a very transient state. So that person who was in that apartment 2 years ago has probably moved twice since then. There's a high likelihood your data costs are going to go up before you want to put that account on the dialer. And whether you're doing a scoring strategy or other things up front, you know, obviously that's going to affect the portfolio and the overall cost of trying to collect and make a right party contact. But to work lean and minimize costs, I think you need to have multiple strategies to deal with the accounts, whether it's, you know, by segmenting it out by business type, like medical and primary versus medical secondary, or the age of the accounts, the type of the accounts, the even the quality of the data, you know, coming from your clients. If they're sending you stuff and you just started a project with them and the stuff's 2 years old, you know, obviously your data costs are going to be much higher. So that's going to affect that the recovery on that portfolio. And then using multiple vendors in skip tracing and things like that in a waterfall. So you're getting the bulk of your data scrubs done with your, you know, your least costly vendor, I guess. And then using other vendors behind them because not everybody's 100%. But I think you touched on this earlier. The biggest thing is to secure that express written permission to call a cell using an ATDS and make sure your clients are well educated on that, the necessity to have that. And while you're at it about ATDS, maybe add email and SMS messaging just to update their guarantor agreements. That's going to affect your contingency rate with the clients too.
Thank you. Appreciate the insights. At this point, I just want to pause the discussion for a minute and say a few words about the sponsor of today's webinar, Arbyte Software. Arbyte Software is a team of nerds who constantly innovate and perfect the most efficient and productive cloud-based contact software for businesses of any size. They specialize in agencies with high outbound call volumes and have created the only TCPA-compliant manual dialing solution that removes the three-second pause from calls and has three levels of human intervention. In addition, its highly customizable VoIP office phone system can revolutionize the way your business communicates with the world. Arbyte Software won't drop calls, never lags, and is designed to maximize calls per minute operating on its own Tier 1 carriers. Thanks again, Arbyte, for sponsoring today's webinar and for your gracious support of an endeavor that seeks to educate and inform the ARM industry. For more information about the company, please go to www.arbytesoftware.com, and Arbyte is spelled A-R-B-E-I-T, arbytesoftware.com. With that, let's pick up with our discussion. Matt, Jonathan, and even Robert, you mentioned an interesting topic during your remarks so far, and that's this notion of sort of testing and sort of learning from your past results to adjust your calling campaigns in the future. And I'm curious, maybe Matt, you can start us off with this one. You know, how granular do you get when you're looking at that data, or what type of data are you looking at, and how does it adjust your calling campaign sort of that are on the horizon?
Well, as far as technology goes, you know, hopefully getting the FCC to act, it's not technology related, but it would certainly help bring clarity to what we're doing as far as being a call center. And getting them to just clarify the definition of an ATDS for everything that would stop some of these frivolous lawsuits. Hopefully also there's a way for an agency to clear its numbers from being blacklisted. You know, we're hearing more and more about that coming up with these apps that are out there, and that your phone number inadvertently ends up the debtor wants to put you on there, but you end up on the do not call list on these apps, and you know, they're preventing you from making legitimate phone calls to people who are wanting to get your call and take care of their debt. Also, a ruling on voice drop technology from the FCC would be great, just to clarify and bring some certainty that, you know, it does not fall within the parameter and scope of the TCPA.
Awesome. Excellent. Thanks, Matt. Jonathan, just curious, you know, about the testing and analytics procedure at FrostArnet and how that impacts calling campaigns.
Yeah, we do quite a bit of analytics and champion challenger campaigns, really driven by, you know, whichever increases the RPC rate by the most. So we've got some analytics that are looking at, you know, like we talked about earlier, different times of day, different clients, different demographics, different scoring bands, and kind of just constantly pitting those strategies against each other, against, you know, the champion challenger. And so, you know, it's more of a constant improvement kind of thing that we're doing. And, you know, and I think there's been talk about, you know, using some of these, you know, off-the-shelf data analytic tools, Tableau, things like that, to help build this expertise in agencies, because, you know, hiring data scientists is not a very cheap endeavor.
Of course, right.
So I would add on, this is Robert, I would add on to that, you know, to really look at, like you said, the results, and you say, how granular do you get? So, you know, our dial vendor offers a business analytics suite where essentially we can get as granular as we need to do, as we need to be. It's pretty customizable. You can create metrics, what you want to see, how you want to see it. You can slice it up a bunch of different ways. So, you know, really investing in that is a good idea. You know, obviously hiring folks to look at your data, you know, with an Excel spreadsheet can be cumbersome and expensive. But with this, it makes it pretty easy. You can slice it up. So I'm sure that whatever dial vendor you work with and Jonathan had mentioned, you know, Tableau, there's other products out there that aren't too terribly expensive that can kind of help you look at, you know, what results you're getting payments from. You know, some of the things I think of is your average handle time, you know, by result. You know, if you look to see, you know, hey, the average is, you know, 250 seconds for this result, but, you know, this group of agents is at 340 seconds. You know, that can really help to, you know, drive down your cost and really get them on that next call. Really what your RPC rate is the most important thing. Obviously conversion rate's important, but, you know, from where I sit, the biggest thing is, you know, how many debtors can I get on the phones? Obviously, your conversion rate is going to depend on how well your agents convert, but also the business that you're spending. So you keep that in mind. You keep that as a back burner stat. But you know, really and truly, you know, the name of the game is to get as many debtors on the phone. So you really have to think kind of out of the box. Even things as you know, like the call blocking we spoke of, and your ring time. You know, how long do you let the phone ring? How many dollars can you save by cutting 6 seconds off your ring time? And then looking at the ROI there. Okay, so we saved, you know, $10,000 on our bill, but we got 2% less RPCs, which cost us $40,000. You know, that's a bad move. So, you know, really investing in the right people to look at the data, investing in the business analytics suite from your dial vendor for someone else, and then, you know, really looking at the agent entered data, keeping in mind that your agent's entering this data, it's not 100% correct. You have to stay on top of them and train them when to use this result, when to enter this. Something as simple as someone entering a $5,000 payment into your dial platform, you know, that could easily be $50,000 with, you know, without the decimal, or $500,000 without the decimal point there. So, you know, really looking at the data, but keeping in mind that the agent entered data may not be complete or correct. So ensuring that that is, but then also realizing that it's most of the time it's apples to apples. It's going to be right the same rate. It's going to be wrong. So it is still a relative view to make decisions, you know, based upon.
I'll add to that too. This is Matt. I just wanted to mention too, whether it's your dialer vendor or your software vendor, you know, we talked about alternative methods of communication, whether it's SMS or sending an email, whether your dialer can do that. But, you know, we're going to get to the point where somebody doesn't want to actually have a phone call. They're going to want to be receive a text message, or they're going to want their preferences to do it by email. So having the ability to switch that obviously is going to reduce your cost from sending out a postal letter versus an email. And if your software can take care of that so that it makes it the preferred method of contact, you know, you'll save yourself a ton of postage, and, you know, your collectors can focus on the people who do want to talk on the phone versus the people who just prefer not to.
I'm curious, with all of the data that you're analyzing, how quickly does that actually end up impacting a calling campaign? I mean, is it a same day situation where you're looking at the data and you're adjusting almost in sort of real time? Or is there sort of more of a lag that you're looking at the data and then, you know, looking at it and sort of looking for trends first before you really sort of make any changes to a campaign?
Well, Mike, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, this is Robert. Sorry. So, you know, really it's going to depend on what change you're talking about. You know, obviously if you're seeing your abandon rate spike, and you just made a message script change, then you know, hey, I need to make an immediate change. Whatever I did on this message script didn't take, calls are dropping. You know, that's a common pitfall is even something as simple as, you know, if you have a front end IVR, do you want to make a payment one or two? And then right after that saying press two for Spanish, you know, we experienced that when kind of building out our IVR is like, oh, well, they're hitting two because they don't want to make a payment and it's going to the Spanish because it's going to the next prompt. So changing that to four. So when you see a change like that, when you see you're dropping calls or something that could affect your bottom line, you really have to move quickly. As soon as you see it, you have to make a decision. You have to, you know, react quickly. But then other things, you know, one of the common pitfalls that I had when I first moved into this role a few years ago is making too many changes for the sake of making changes and not really looking at the data for long enough time and making too many changes within that time. You really need to have a test and a control, and you really need to look at that for, you know, a period of time. One day of calling is not going to do it, you know, a week, 2 weeks, a month even, depending on how drastic of a change you're wanting to make. But really, you know, making a change on a small segment of your business, you know, you're looking at the numbers, you're saying, hey, you know, this doesn't look right. I really think this is going to work. So you make a change on a small segment of your inventory, you change nothing else, and you use that segment of inventory, whether it's a tranche of business or if it's, you know, even if you just say, okay, every account number that ends in nine, you know, whatever it is, your delimiter, just make sure that it's fair. You don't want to say, okay, Boca Raton, we're going to make a change, but we're not going to in, you know, Detroit. You know, there's a huge demographic difference there. So you want to make sure that your test is fair, but really looking at your test and your control, you know, using baseline stats to determine where you were, and then, you know, with your historicals, and then kind of going forward saying, okay, so nothing else changes. The tests that we did after 30 days of dialing, the RPC rate went up 12%. You know, looking at other stats too, because if your RPC rate goes up, you know, even, you know, 20%, but your total outbound call volume goes down 60%, your net RPCs are still going to be down. So that's a loss for you. So really looking at all sides of the analytical perspective, and really trying to, you know, dig in and take your time when making changes, especially when you're talking about a broad brushstroke for an entire portfolio or an entire client or entire inventory or portfolio. One example I'll give is when we made a change to add a front-end IVR to our inbound calls, I did it on a very small segment of business, and I did it for a couple of weeks, and then I added another, and then I really tracked the changes. You know, I put it into, you know, a summary for kind of my peers and my, you know, bosses to say, hey, this is what I'm seeing. What are you guys seeing? Really kind of discussing that and conversing that. And then once you feel like you've made the right decision, then implementing that so that your broad brushstroke change is exactly the same as your test. That's another really important thing and a really big pitfall is not all pieces of business or not all revenue streams are going to react the same to this test. So really that'd be the biggest advice is start small, work slow, unless it's something that's costing you dollars today, in which case you have to react fast.
I agree with that. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, yeah, Robert hit most of what I was going to say. The only thing that I would add is, you know, when you mentioned how quickly we're making changes, we're doing exactly, you know, the same thing Robert was talking about is taking small chunks, tranches of business and making a daily change on one of those. And then we have another that we're going to do, you know, weekly analysis on or another that may be a month. That way, again, yeah, you're not making changes too quick to know which changes produce which result. So dividing up your business and taking out, you know, chunks of business that way and using different kind of tiered approaches is what we do and works well for us.
I'd agree with the thought process that it really kind of depends on what it is. I agree that, you know, some of these things need to be thought out and tested, but there's certain things, for instance, if you have a large campaign running and your call center is just getting inundated with inbound calls and there's a lot of abandoned, we did a pretty much a campaign on the fly or a build on the fly that will redirect a call abandons into a separate campaign so that when things slow down, we're calling those folks back. Obviously, they wanted to talk to us because they were calling us. And then there's other things that you don't want to necessarily rush to judgment to change. For instance, a result code. A result code from different dialer vendors, it might be invalid in one. It might have some kind of sit tones are not exact science. So the result code you get today may not be the same result code you get tomorrow. And the sit tone might have a message as opposed to an invalid number or something. So you don't want to automatically do something with a result code until you actually go test some of those numbers and make sure that the results you're getting over time are the same and consistent, so that when you, for instance, change the status that you're going to skip trace these accounts now based on this result code, you know, you got a track record of this account or this phone number has been called 25 times and it's the exact same result code, and we tested it manually, and in fact it is a sit tone that the number's not in operation, or you know, whatever the sit tone message may happen to be.
We've talked a lot, you know, about we haven't talked a lot, but we've definitely mentioned sort of alternative technology channels or communication channels such as direct drop voicemail or SMS or even email. Are there other technologies on the horizon that you think can help agencies save money, either when making calls or sort of in their telephony departments? Maybe Jonathan, you could take that one first this time.
Yeah, definitely. I wouldn't be surprised to see more of a trend of agencies creating cell phone applications and being able to push notifications to people that have obviously signed up for that service. But those are free, cheaper than any of the other options. So I see that as a trend going forward of push notifications through cell phone applications.
Are you seeing anybody doing that now? Are you doing that now?
It's something we're looking into. I have not heard of any others doing it yet. It's definitely on our roadmap.
We're actually doing the texting right now, where the consumer initiates the text message, and we are also testing with our dialer vendor pushing a text message out to the people that have where we have cell phone permission to use an ATDS. But also, we're working right now testing a vendor called Pay Near Me, and what they're going to be doing is actually the collector can initiate a text message to them. They can make a one-time pay or a multiple month payment plan, and it'll store it in Google Wallet on an app on their phone that will be initiated by Pay Near Me sending them this text.
Interesting.
The upside to that is it's sort of all done automatically then, and you're looking at sort of not having to send those reminders out. Is that the upside to it?
Exactly, because once they get the message the first time, they don't need their account number, they don't need the bill. The information is stored on their phone, and in fact, they can either go to the text message, or I guess the way it works is it's stored in Google Wallet, so they already know that they need to pay their doctor bill, and it's that time of the month or whatever, and they just go to Google Wallet and make their payment any time of the day, 24/7.
Interesting. Robert, anything on the horizon that you think might help agencies save money on their telephony and making calls?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, there's a lot of vendors out there. I know we've talked about a couple. You know, one that we started working with is Neustar to, you know, focus on the call blocking. You know, we're working on a test with them, you know, to try to tag our number so that we're not getting spam blocked and we're not getting call blocked and we're not getting, you know, tagged as spam and so forth. So I think that that's a big one. I think that I don't have the results of the test, so I can't really speak intelligently on it, but I know that the ROI is going to be there just based upon our connect rates. You know, keep in mind with our business, you know, we focus on mostly telecom recoveries. So, you know, our margins are much smaller than, you know, an agency that's collecting on like bank card paper and stuff like that. But another thing that was huge for us, and it kind of evolved, you know, we're working with a company that does AI, But you know, the process to building that is so long. It's such a long road, and it takes so much time. So, kind of in the interim, what we did this ahead of tax season this year, is we created a front end IBR that basically is able to take payments and also capture wrong number removals. The biggest thing was obviously, you know, being able to take the payments with the IVR. You know, I'm sure most companies are doing that now, where, you know, you essentially don't have to have an agent take the payment 24 hours a day. We also have the web pay. But what was really big for us, for me specifically, you know, I was really tracking the ROI here, was giving the opportunity for the caller to remove their telephone number prior to speaking to an agent. So what I did was I looked at our agent wrong number removals, and I got that number. And basically what I found is, after implementing this, after about 30 days, the wrong number removal from agents decreased by about 50%. And we had the front end IVR removing that number. And it was just as simple as just a ping off the database to say, this is the name of the person we're trying to call. Is this person, yes or no? If they say yes, or they know the person, we'll route to an agent. If they say no, we ask them again, are you sure it's not this person? Number gets removed. But in doing so, our total wrong number removals didn't increase. There was a slight increase, but it was nominal. And our total agent time for removing wrong numbers decreased by 50%. So then I was able to formulate an ROI by saying, by them not being on this 30-second average handle time wrong number call, you know, 4,000 times a day, we're able to make this much more calls. And you could actually see it the week that we did it, the increase in the amount of RPCs we made, and the amount of successful transfers we had based upon the agents not having to field those calls. So that was a huge saving in time for us, as well as costs, and also collector morale, because the last thing an agent wants to hear on an inbound call is, hey, you're calling me, it's the wrong number. You know, when they get that inbound call, they're expecting and hoping for a payment. Hey, this is on my credit, I just want to pay it. And we saw an increase, not a total number increase, but of the percentage of the calls that they handled on an inbound basis, the conversion rate went up by about 20%, simply because they're not fielding those wrong number calls. So that was huge for us. It was pretty much free. It just took my time, and it really helped us. And that can be done right away for most companies.
Yeah, I would just add that we are using Neustar as well. We're past the testing stage and actually using it in production now. And it's unfortunate that you know, their service is necessary, but kudos to them for filling in a gap due to the FCC's inaction. But yeah, we've seen similar results. RPC rates much higher after using that service. One other, I guess, kind of trend that I've seen, it hasn't really taken off well in our vertical, is you know, AI agents, and some of these vendors tout that, you know, these AI agents can take 97% of phone calls without having to talk to a human agent. It doesn't work well in our vertical. We do pretty much 100% healthcare, so half of our phone calls are spent explaining insurance to consumers. But you know, from what I've heard, it works better in other industries, like Mike mentioned, maybe in telecom or finance or paper.
Yeah, Jonathan, I would agree with that. You know, we're focused more on first party telecom recoveries. I know that would be absolutely phenomenal for like a BPO, and we're actually, like I said, working on an AI type of process. But even just to be able to send, you know, to be able to treat your accounts, the smaller balances, the lower scores, I think we talked about it earlier, either you or Matt brought it up. Even just being able to treat those, somebody needs to change their address, somebody needs to, you know, update a payment, simple things. I think that it's definitely going to help for some verticals. It's just a matter of, you know, weighing the cost of the AI versus the cost of a human being, and also putting into consideration your customer experience. And, you know, obviously, we're probably old school collectors, so you're not going to probably dun someone that's refusing to pay their bill with AI. But you can certainly update their address and, you know, take a payment if they just want to pay their bill. So that's kind of the direction that we're we're moving towards in 2019 is, you know, self-help for anybody that wants it or anybody that we're going to done to paying the bill. Pretty much everyone else, we're going to, you know, try to push to the AI to keep the agents on, you know, dunning debtors, which is, you know, what we all do.
I think the only thing I did, this man, the only thing I would add to that is making sure your current IVR, if it's an inbound call, can have the ability to, you know, if they don't want to stay in queue and wait and wait and wait for an agent, that your IVR has the ability to, they don't lose their place and they get called back, and then your agent can, first available agent will get that call and the debtor's not sitting there waiting.
Absolutely agree.
Jonathan, I wanted to circle back to something you said earlier in the discussion with respect to using a software as a service model versus sort of old school phones. The conversations that you have with your colleagues, other agencies out there, are there still a lot of agencies out there using old school phones, or have most moved on to that SaaS model by now?
I would say most that I've talked to have moved on. I'm sure smaller agencies, it's tougher for that initial cost. But I would say, from what I've seen, at least 80%+ of other agencies I've talked to are now using, you know, the SaaS model. And, you know, it shifts some of your cost from phone lines to internet cost. But it's a huge cost savings.
And it's just kind of getting over that hump of that initial investment. That's the big stumbling block for the agencies, you think, that haven't made that switch yet?
Yes, I would say that. And then also telecom vendors are not the greatest to work with. So trying to actually disconnect your service and stop paying for it is, that's going to be a full-time job for somebody for a few weeks, if not months.
Got it. With respect to the other technologies, the other communications we've mentioned, text messaging, emails, direct drop voicemails, does that get folded into an agency's sort of telephony expenses, or is that coming from a separate area? How is that sort of handled from the business end of the agency?
I'll take that. I'll just start off by saying, I mean, I think that's the wave of the future. It's all about consumer preference these days, and you know, whether you track it separately or include it as one big ticket item, it's going to drive up your expense. It's a different avenue of communication, but it's something that, you know, you're doing to make it more convenient for the consumer or the patient to pay you. And obviously, the more convenient you can make it for them, hopefully that's going to drive your recoveries.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, we, you know, kind of lump it all together as one large communication cost as a percent of revenue, but we definitely break that down based on the channel, because, you know, some of them are cheaper than others and have better RPC rates based on those. And so we're going to shift our resources to maximize that.
I'm also curious how you work with your clients to sort of manage telephony costs and sort of manage expectations, because I'm sure clients want you to be, you know, not overly aggressive, but be aggressive, be persistent, consistent in terms of the communications or the call attempts you're making, but you're trying to balance the expenses of doing that. So how do you have that conversation? How do you sort of manage that part of the relationship?
Yeah, we actually have that conversation with clients, kind of similar to what Matt mentioned earlier, and educating the clients to update their consent verbiage for their consumers. Because we'll have the conversation with clients that if you've got good consent language and we're able to use these other channels of communication, that you know, we will offer a lower rate if we're able to use those. Fortunately, in the healthcare industry, they're usually very much behind other industries when it comes to technology. So very few of our clients are okay with doing that. But the ones that are, we're using that to as an advantage to win contracts.
I'd add to that. I would say make sure that that information and language is in your contract, and that you secure a copy of the guarantor form, you know, not only to review it, but to put it in the client file with the contract. And I agree with the whole thing about, you know, lowering the rate or offering a lower rate. And if they're going to update the guarantor agreement to include, you know, email and SMS messaging in there, but by having it in the contract, you're actually protecting yourself too. Should, you know, you, nobody wants to sue their client or bring them into a lawsuit where you're getting sued, but that, you know, that's the purpose of a good indemnification clause, but adding that specifically in there, I mean, there's no beef about it. I mean, if they say they get cell phone permission and they sign the contract and you have a copy of the guarantor agreement, if the minute they change that, you know, you're exposed. And the only other thing I would add is make sure not only in the contract, but you have a process in place that if they give revocation to either you or your client, that there's some kind of bidirectional communication between you and your client to make sure that that notice is given, that the permission to call the cell phone has been revoked.
Does it just sort of boil down to trust at that point?
Trust but verify with a contract.
Yes, a robust vendor management program.
Do you find, Matt, that, you know, clients want you to be sort of, for lack of a better term, aggressive in your calling strategies, or, you know, do they want, you know, how do you sort of usually find the clients to be in terms of their expectations?
Well, in our market, which is healthcare, our clients definitely don't want us to be aggressive. They do want us to be assertive and collect the money, but to the point it starts driving complaints or, you know, gives exposure to us or them. Nobody wants to get sued. Obviously, everybody wants to avoid that. So compliance really drives the way we collect money, at least with our agency. It's compliance driven. So you can have a very assertive collector on the phone, but we audit calls. It can be tied into like their bonus program, so that if somebody is out of whack and they're a great collector, but they're, you know, on the thin gray line of doing the wrong thing or being aggressive or overly, I'll call it overly assertive, you know, a call can escalate and get out of hand. And you've got to be able to monitor that. And by having some kind of audit mechanism that you can show your client and a program whereby you can show where their compensation is affected if they're not doing the right thing all the time. And we even tell our collectors, hey, we tell our clients, test us, call us. Pretend you're the debtor and call and see if you can trip up our collector. And that keeps them on their toes.
Interesting. Looking at, you mentioned auditing, call recording. Do you record all your calls? Is that something, and if you do record them, how long do you hold on to them for?
This is Matt again. I'll take that real quick. I mean, generally we record all calls, obviously, but I think it's a good business practice because it happens so many times. The client will call you and tell you that they got a call from a patient. The patient complained that your collector said this, that. You pull the recording and lo and behold, you know, the patient is exposed for telling an untruth. But the other thing is, we have just started to hold our call recordings longer. And that's because here, specifically in Florida, there is, maybe this is a whole nother topic and a whole nother webinar, but there is a particular attorney firm working with the bankruptcy trustees to go back after the 341 meeting is held and sue an agency for alleged violations because they have a form they give the debtor that's presented in the 341. And it's basically, you know, alleging, have you received collection calls? Have you received more than one a week, or, you know, whatever the boilerplate template is, but you end up getting a lawsuit filed against you after the chapter 7 or chapter 13 has already been discharged, and they can go back 5 years and sue the agency for alleged misconduct. Now, it's not the debtor getting the money, it's the trustee, and of course the attorney's awarded fees. And that's happening quite a bit, not just to agencies now, but we've even seen it happen to some clients. So we're educating our clients, keeping them very well informed, and doing what we can do to track this and mitigate it and fight it.
And Mike, this is Robert. And so, yeah, we record all of our calls here at DCI as well. You know, we We keep all of the call recordings for 5 years. Most likely that's the recommendation by our compliance, most likely due to the attorney, the predators were in Florida as well, that was just spoke of. But one of the biggest things when you're dealing with call recording is your sensitive information, right? Like your card numbers, your routing and account numbers. So we actually have a service that redacts, the call. So the call takes place, the agent takes the payment. We have the dial vendor send that through a redaction process before sending it back to us. So we're not storing any type of, PCI information. We're not, storing the credit card number. We're not storing checking, routing account numbers, what have you. So they basically redact anything where there's four strings of digits from the call. So when we get the call back from the vendor, we have the call, really indefinitely. But we store them for at least 5 years, and we don't have that information in the call. We do have a separate storage from the actual dial vendor, where they keep the call for up to 2 years. So we do have access if we needed the unredacted call. We're not storing it. The dial vendor is storing it. All the calls that we store are redacted for PCI compliance. So that's one pitfall, to think about is, yes, you should record your calls. And yes, you should come up with some redaction. Some dial vendors are able to do it in-house. There's other companies such as CallMiner that can do it for you. And then also a lot of dial vendors have the ability for the collectors to start and stop recording. That's a decision that you have to make. Obviously, that's dangerous, putting the recording button in front of the agent. We all know the potential for an agent to hit mute and say whatever they want and the recording doesn't capture it. So that's a decision you have to make, but definitely want to keep those recordings and definitely want to redact them so you're not hanging on to card information for a potential violation or a potential data breach.
Yeah, I would add that we as well record all calls, and we use a tiered approach where we do allow the collectors to mute the call, but then our vendor also does the same thing where any string of digits longer than 4 digits gets redacted. But we have to pay for that service. So allowing the collectors to handle the large majority of those up front reduces that cost for us with the vendor charging for that service. So I think it's goes back to that defense in depth when it comes to security is, if it makes sense from a cost perspective to use all those controls if possible. And then I know Robert mentioned CallMiner too. There's a couple of competitors in that space. I think another is SpeechIQ. That's one area that may be going out of the scope of this webinar, but analytics based on your call recordings can give some valuable insights as well, not only into some of the statistics they were talking about earlier, wrap-up times and things like that, but, to train your own staff and to catch those things before your client does.
Sure. Yeah. And there's obviously plenty of vendors out there that can handle that for you. But I agree. We do that as well. It's really great to be able to go back and look to see what are your collectors hearing? What are they saying? What are the common rebuttals that they're giving? What are some of the pitfalls that they have when they're on the phone? So I definitely would recommend it is expensive. From a cost perspective, but it's definitely something where you can build an ROI if you have the cash flow to be able to afford some type of speech analytics software.
Well, we've only got a few minutes left, and we do have a couple of questions in the queue here that I want to get to. If you do have a question, now would be the time to hit the Q&A button on your Zoom webinar control panel and type it in, and we'll try to get to it before we run out of time. The first question that came in, does anyone on the panel use the best time to call software solutions in their telephone strategy?
I would say definitely. And I know we talked about that a little earlier, but we also will use that as part of our result codes to mark those accounts as the best time of day to contact that consumer and use that to drive our dialing strategies.
Excellent. Another question, does any of the panel using soft phone only technology whereby your dialer or IVR are actually your telco system, whereby you eliminate the need for handsets, even for administrative and non-agent staff.
Well, this is Robert. That's definitely a tough one. You know, and we're not currently completely soft touch phone, you know, especially when you're talking about executive management staff. It would be nice to do that, honestly. But you know, unfortunately, there are folks in other departments that, you know, need to be able to pick up a phone and make a local call. So although, you know, that is limited, you know, I think that getting those folks on board, especially on the executive end, to log into a service or use this newfangled technology that, you know, we all know has been around forever, is a little tough. So while it would be ideal, no, we haven't gone that route.
I would add that we are, you know, 100% soft phone here, no handsets. The one downside is we are having to use two separate vendors for that. So we use one vendor for the actual call center and then a separate soft phone vendor for executive and management.
Can you explain maybe some of the reason behind that, Jonathan?
Well, yeah, so the vendor that we use for the call center is specific to the call center space and it doesn't have direct dial capability, which our executive staff need. So that's why we use a different vendor for that.
Got it. Okay. Sorry, Matt, did I interrupt you?
I was just going to say, same here. We use soft phones on the floor, and then management uses, you know, the old Polycoms.
Got it. I'd be remiss if we had a webinar on an ARM industry topic and didn't really sort of talk a lot about compliance. So let me start the wrap up process by sort of asking each of you how, you know, complying with TCPA, with legal rulings, with all of that sort of factors into your telephony strategy. Maybe Robert, you can take that one first.
Yeah, sure. You know, so we have, you know, quite a bit of business that we work and, you know, we use the HCI product from LiveVox, where basically there's human interaction with an agent launching the phone number or the phone call manually, and then it bridges to a closer agent as the calls connect. So there's cost there with actually having the agents, you know, clicking those telephone calls. So that's really, you know, our biggest, I guess bugaboo, if you will, when it comes to, you know, the TCPA and, you know, what it's really costing us is just the sheer fact of, you know, obviously, you want to develop a plan to grab consent and then grab revocation, we talked about, but, you know, really for those, especially in our industry doing telecom collections, a lot of the clients are very focused on brand loyalty, brand recognition. So although some of them do capture consent, it's just not enough for us to, you know, consider that consent for us to dial. So that is a huge expense for us, is actually having to have folks on the payroll to launch those calls. And if the TCPA is changed, repealed, or otherwise made to where we wouldn't have to do that, that would be huge, because obviously all that money that we're spending there, we can reinvest in the company to, you know, make more calls and get better.
This is Matt. I'll just go back to kind of what I said before, and that was just, you know, make sure you're educating your client on the TCPA, make sure they have express written permission, not just to call the cell using ATDS, but SMS messaging, email, you know, whatever the current preferences are. And always go back to that, you know, as technology changes and people's preferences changes, revisit your contracts and, you know, just protect yourself, protect your clients, and just continuously educate your clients, and then make sure revocation is in there. And not just that, but also you come across an account where, you know, a person's represented by an attorney or it's bankruptcy, both you and your client need to have bidirectional communication to notify each other, to protect each other.
Yeah, I would echo what Robert said. We're also using the HCI product, and, you know, unfortunately, that's a cost of compliance in our industry. And the TCPA and FCC rulings and case law, it's become a barrier to entry to our industry, which is both good and bad. But it's making it much harder for the smaller agencies to compete.
Excellent. Well, we've run out of time. We've reached the top of the hour, so we'll finish the discussion for today. But before I let everybody go, I wanted to thank Jonathan, Robert, and Matt one more time for their insights and the information they shared. Really appreciate them taking their time and sort of digging into what's going on at their businesses and sharing some of their secret sauce with us. That was very nice of them. I also wanted to thank Arbyte Software for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.arbytesoftware.com to learn more about the company. Thanks to everybody who participated and listened and asked questions today. Please stay tuned to accountsrecovery.net for news and more webinars in the very near future. I hope everybody enjoys the rest of their day. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks. Thank you.